Welcome to the Deeks.ai podcast, where Wake Forest innovators unpack the real-world magic of artificial intelligence through candid conversations. I'm Michael Ferrari.
I'm Ryan Scholl.
Please join us as we explore how artificial intelligence is transforming work across campus, one fascinating story at a time. Get ready to discover the human side of technological innovation. On this episode, we are joined by Greg Collins, Associate Director of Client Services at Wake Forest University. From polishing emails to more efficient note-taking, all the way to figuring out what's for dinner, please join us as we talk with Greg and learn about the variety of ways in which AI is transforming the landscape of his work life, as well as how he uses it at home.
We are here with Greg Collins, who is the Associate Director of Client Services at Wake Forest. I'm not going to do a long introduction because almost everybody on campus probably knows Greg. For those who don't, Greg's one of those people who just makes our technology run on campus. The reason things work so well and you don't have to worry about it, and thank Greg.
Well, that's mighty generous introduction there, Ryan.
Yeah, I had AI write that.
Oh, gotcha. That's yeah. Perfect.
I said put it in a different tone.
Formalize it?
Yeah.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Greg, how would you define AI?
It's so hard to put that into like layman terms because you hear all this chatter about models and the actual hardware that does it. And especially in our world, you hear all the technical background. And when somebody says, what's AI? You're like, where do I start? Because I don't know what level.
Exactly.
Yeah. You want to be.
Yeah. You're talking about machine learning.
Right.
You're talking about generative AI. Or are you talking about just some code somebody
right.
wrote somewhere? Because it's overused.
Yes, it is.
And so that's why we gave you the unfair question.
Right. Kind of like somebody was explaining the bear button on their weather app. Like, they're calling that AI, but is it really AI? So in simple terms, I consider AI a computer-generated brain. Like, it's somewhat trying to emulate a human experience, but obviously is artificial. It can be tied into pretty much anything you want it to. And, you know, as we were talking about before, I feel like that's kind of, we're at that peak of everybody's putting it in everything, mm-hmm. or at least using the term.
They're claiming they put in everything.
They're using that term as a tag to get you. Because some people right now are clamoring over the, oh, it has AI, I'm going to use it just to be that.
Yeah.
It's definitely in the fad phase, and that's where I'm trying to kind of weed through that fadness and figure out what's actually useful and what I could see being more long-term.
So weaving through this, is this something that you only do because of your job title, or are you interested in it on a personal level?
I'm getting more into the personal level. I was very skeptical at first because that, you know, the term AI has been around for years, but you didn't quite know what it was or what it was doing. And, you know, so when this big whole thing like OpenAI came out, you're just like, oh, it's yet another thing.
Yeah. I mean, I remember hearing about AI when I was a kid, but it was in terms of like the new Madden, the AI, they actually like tackle you.
Right.
And like, I'm talking like not even like modern, like Madden, like back when it was on a cartridge and stuff. So yeah, seeing the fadification or whatever, if that's even a word, is like very interesting.
Because I think the way it really came into prominence was when generative AI really hit the market.
I think that's a good point. You know, to me, it is really two different things,
mm-hmm.
Which I know from a departmental level, we've been trying to use that generative word more often because that's kind of more of what we're using from a institutional level is how can it help me?
And what our users would say.
Right. So going back to your, you know, I was very skeptical, even for a professional level until I was kind of told you need to start looking at this and giving feedback. And then I really got into, you know, today's AI. Generative and all the tools that Google and Microsoft and OpenAI have come out with, and others like Claude and those. It's amazing what the product you can get out of it and the usefulness, more mm-hmm. so than what is this thing doing to the app I already. So it's been fun to do it from a professional level and see how it can enhance my work and save me time and make my emails better and, you know, the simple things. But from a personal level, it's been fun to use it. For example, you know, we have this type of produce and this type of meat left over from meals. So I throw it in there. This is what we have. What should I cook? And it comes up with some recipe that I would have never tried before. And some were just like, we'll pass.
But others, what do you use to do that?
Like, mostly ChatGPT. As you know, I'm an Apple user and they have the Mac app for it. So it's just helpful to have an app on the computer. So that's kind of what I've been using mostly in the personal life. Okay. Obviously, on professional, I've been using Gemini most.
Well, so on the professional, on the Wake Forest side, you have boots on the ground. You're one of the people that, you know, the campus would look to for leadership or some guidance. So I'm really putting you on the spot here. You have to give us the right answers. You know, what are the tools you use and what are you doing with them?
I'm spending most of my time focusing on Gemini, the premium. So this is the fully integrated Google Workspace Gemini. And I use it really within the whole suite. I probably use it most in Gmail. I don't consider myself the best writer, especially being married to an English teacher. I've always been very careful.
Do you send her messages now? Hold on, honey. I need to email you this.
I have done it before, depending on what if it's not just a quick text message, I have been like, is this correct? But, you know, Gemini provides this, it's just called Polish for emails. And there's not really an email I send that I don't push it on, unless it's a quick yes, like, you know, yeah, that's fine. Especially if I'm sending anything to a campus partner or somebody on campus or vendors, that's what I use the most. I do write the email, and I just hit polish, and it just makes it sound a little better or fix my mistake.
I need to give that a try, because before I knew about Gemini, I tried putting stuff through like ChatGPT, but if I was to be like, hey Greg, do you know when when we'll get info on those new models? It would like spit out something that sounded nothing like me, and it'd be like, dear Greg,
yes,
as exactly. You may know, we should be anticipating some models. And it's like, no, that's like, it should have like a wax seal at the bottom the way it was wording exactly. That. So I need to give Gemini a try.
It is fun when you get emails from especially somebody you know, like, he didn't write that.
And I've been caught by one of our colleagues where, you know, every once in a while, Gemini will you can put in a prompt and it will write the email for you. I very rarely use that because it doesn't sound like me. But I have done that, and I get a chat, you didn't write that.
That's true.
What's really interesting about that now is some of these tools, not Gemini and Gmail, but some of these other tools, they learn your tone. Claude's really good at that, and I think ChatGPT has a part of that. But as you interact with at least these chatbots more and more, you can say, write like me, and it really gets how you write. So I think sooner or later, it's going to sound a lot more like you each time.
Yeah, I agree. And that's one reason I've been using ChatGPT more at personal, is because in the settings, it does say, tell me about you.
Yes.
You can put your profession, you can put your family dynamics, you can put, and so it does kind of take that in consideration when it's generating response.
You talked about integrating Gemini into the workspace. Now, email is the one, it's probably the most prevalent. People see that. Are there other workspace apps that you use it with?
I use it with Docs. So I manage three different teams. So we have team meetings, and I use it a lot for building agendas. I do it for team meetings, but mostly for like vendor meetings where, you know, I just put a blurb of this is what I need to remember to talk about, and it puts it in more of an outline. That is very helpful. Because I can put, you know, three words for each thing, and it kind of expands on that, which is helpful. I also use it in Sheets a lot for, it does a lot of suggesting of, you know, putting data into tables or, you know, if you change. I love the chips, the Google chips, where it, you know, turns an email address into a person and you can extract data from Google, and it'll, you know, recommend if you do it once, it kind of says, do you want to do this to the whole sheet? And that sort of stuff is very helpful because, you know, it may take only 30 seconds to drag down the sheet, but if you can hit a button, it saves it. So Sheets is very helpful when it's, I don't use it a lot for like create a table for this where I'm typing in a prompt, but how Gemini's been integrated with seeing the data that's in the sheet and then giving you, would you like to do this? It kind of anticipates. Sometimes it's not helpful. which is fine. But when it is helpful, it is very time saving.
Outside of Gemini, are there other tools you use?
I use the AI companion in Zoom a lot. Whether I like it or not, most of my days are filled with meetings. I'm constantly in meetings with vendors or people on campus or other teams on IS to make sure our teams are on the same page or working on projects. And anytime I'm the host of a meeting, I have AI companion summary turned on, and that is super helpful. It has allowed me to be more present in meetings because I've actually stopped taking meeting notes. Like if it's a task I know that is specific to me, I'll put in my task app. But from a, you know, taking team meeting notes or meetings with a vendor or anything, I've stopped taking notes because the summary is so, you know, we've all had good laughs about some of the stuff that it will spit out or the small little nuggets that it picks up on. So it's fun to read through it because you usually get a good laugh. But the way it lays out the next step, it kind of picks up on tasks that different people need to do. And then just the summary, it's there if I need to go back to it. And a lot of times what I've done is I'll copy and paste that into the team notes document. And that's my notes for the meeting. So that's been very helpful.
We're going to do a new segment here. It's called Vendor Showdown. And what are your feelings of the comparisons between how the Zoom AI companion takes notes versus the inside of Google Meet, how Gemini takes those notes?
So, very interesting question. You know, I obviously have used both and used both on a regular basis. Ultimately, I like the Zoom companion better. I feel like it structures it better. Google Meet Notes does not do the next steps or I think it's called next steps section where it kind of does a bullet point list of people's tasks that are talked about. Google Meets also has, to me, been a little less accurate in the summary or hasn't picked up on everything I think are the important pieces.
That's interesting you say that because, you know, as we go around the department, we have evangelists on both sides.
Yes.
And, you know, we definitely have colleagues who would say the exact opposite.
Right.
You know, and then I'm going to be a complete contrarian as somebody who spends much of their day taking notes.
Yeah, yeah.
I personally don't like the note-taking companion. I feel they miss a lot of the points. I think Google Meet summarizes a little better than Zoom. Zoom has more misses. It's comical, some of the stuff it picks up. Yeah, I think it's a really good start on these note-taking ones, but I like my own note-taking style better. But I think where a point you're really hitting is if you don't have the time to take the notes or don't want to go back and look at them, it's a huge time saver. And it can probably get you 75-80% there, which, you know, perfect is the enemy of done, right? Is that what it is? Yeah. So as a perfectionist myself, I don't love it, but I think it is a huge time saver. And for a lot of people who don't like taking notes, one of these tools, either Zoom or Google, you know, could work. And I think, is, you know, as we were talking about, it's much more of a preference which one you like.
I think you brought up a very good conversation in itself, especially around the campus, depending on whether you're faculty, staff, or a student that is in a club that they do meeting notes or however you look at it. One, it's really going to come down to preference, and it's going to come down to what you, in your job as a project manager, it's a little more important that you get the facts right, because as we all know, we'll look at it years ahead and determine decisions off the notes that were taken. So, you know, I can see in your place where that would be a little, it needs to be a little more than that 75-80% on target. And then there's people that may not like any of them, but having it is better than not having, you know, so it really comes down to your job and then your preference of what you like. And as you said, there are evangelists in our department that they like Google Meet just because it's a Google product. Some people like Zoom because it's a Zoom product or that it's not a Google product.
Exactly.
So it's really up to preference and I think that's why I have enjoyed really digging into it all is because there's so many products out there now. At first, that was kind of daunting, and I'm like, why does there need to be seven that I've heard about in the last two days?
I completely agree. Yeah.
But when you say, you know what, Gemini Chat just doesn't give me what I want. Let me go to ChatGPT and see what that does. I really don't like what that does. But when you look at Claude,
yeah,
and it's like, it gives me exactly what I need for this type of prompt. but yes. doesn't work for others. I think that's where it's, once you kind of dig into it and yeah. actually understand some of their purposes, you end up using multiples throughout the day and not zoning in on one.
There are a couple leaders in the industry. What do you guys think?
I personally could, I could see it tiring people out. Like if you want to look at it very similar to now, like cable and subscription services. Yeah. And it's like the whole reason we started liking these subscription services is I don't have a $200 cable bill, but now it's like, all right, what's the new show? What do I watch it on? This one's on Max. This one's on Peacock. This one's on Paramount Plus. This one's like literally like over a dozen services now.
So now you pay $200 on yeah, 10
yeah,
different
shows. Yeah, exactly. And I saw ones now. I saw like a meme not that long ago where it was for something like bundling a couple of them together. And the person was like, oh, great. So we're circling back to cable.
We're going right back.
It's like, yes, exactly. I could see
I saw that coming a few years ago, too. I'm like, what is that?
And honestly, that like, the tiring out of like AI, that's part of why I like purposely won't get into like the, well, which model is it using? But it's like, you know what? To me, it's just like ChatGPT or Gemini. It's like, I'm using this. I just don't want to know the language it's working, or it's using and stuff like that. Just because it gets exhausting. And I personally find most of the people I deal with who I'm talking to them about AI, most of them are talking about it in a very like surface level like yeah. way, opposed to like knowing what model it's running.
That's a great point. I have also found that is exhausting, just trying to figure mm-hmm. out, okay, I'm in ChatGPT, am I using 1.5? And you know, because tomorrow will be different.
Yes.
Unfortunately, from the professional side, I have to know that because yep. I'm asked, mm-hmm. you know.
And there are 9 different models of ChatGPT and 14 of Gemini.
Right.
Greg, you're definitely one of the people who have lots of interactions with people on campus. You are one of the faces of our technology. How do you sense campus is feeling? Are there people all over the place? You know, is it a lot of excitement, a lot of apprehension?
Both. You know, I thought I was skeptic at first, but talking to some around campus, faculty, staff are about equal, I would think. They don't want to touch it because they don't want something else thinking for them. And they're afraid what that where their information goes. Then there's others that are, I didn't know it could do this. This can change my life. My job's going to be so much easier because, you know, a 3-hour task can now be done in 5 minutes. So I really see it all over the board. But I think from a overall campus level, I feel like we're at this kind of time of, these are cool, but I'm just not sure how to use them in my professional life. And honestly, the AI Fest that IS put on in December, I think that helped a lot with people understanding, you know, to us, mm-hmm. like we talked about a few minutes ago, this AI term, what does that even mean?
Yeah, that's one thing I actually think, for being in on some of those conversations, I actually think Wake Forest is doing a really good job on is everything I've personally seen of the messaging about AI and really like helping create resources to like know what it is and understand it. I actually think we've been doing a good job of that. And I thought the AI Fest was a really good example of that, of, you know, just like, you know, like Ryan, your discussion about like Notebook LM, like I think that's exactly the type of stuff that a lot of people need to see, and I think will actually like help people be less apprehensive about AI, is seeing a very specific thing. Like, oh, okay, this is for note taking. You don't know much about AI. That could be like a really daunting thing. Like I think we joked about before, like thinking like you're going to walk into your office and there's going to be a bunch of androids or something right. in there. And it's like, oh yeah, I take notes. Oh, I record meetings and it transcribes it, so I don't have to take notes. I think like, I don't mean it in a bad way, but I think showing people the mundane, practical applications of AI is a really effective way of helping calm people.
I would completely agree. And I think that's where, you know, where people are, they really just don't know where to even start.
Yes.
Because there are so many choices. There's so many, I mean, we've mentioned, 6 different just chatbots. Those mm-hmm. are just generative. I'm going to put on a prompt. It's going to spill out some text.
And you haven't even touched the surface of how many there are now. I mean, a new one pops up every day.
And then you talk about Notebook LM and all these other products that are not chatbots, but they're tools that can help you do other stuff. And I think what I saw is kind of a shift, at least for the people that attended the AI Fest, a shift of, okay, they helped me weed through the water of what all these tools are and what I can actually use. I mean, just from that to now, I mean, we've had 25, 30 Gemini premium requests of departments paying that cost because they now see the benefit of, you know, we're seeing these department heads say, I want to license with these three other people and we're going to see what our department can do. Mm-hmm. And talking about finding funding for their entire department after they can make sure it's actually so.
So I think we could do a whole show on AI literacy resources we have on campus here. There's anything from what IS is doing to what the School of Business is doing to what the Center for Advancement of Teaching is doing. You know, so we have the academic resources and the administrative resources. Michael has so much expertise with some of this AI stuff, and we have some other experts in our department around campus. From the conversations you had, what are the quick things we can do to increase this literacy?
Most people are asking what's available to me. You know, and to your point, I think IS has done a great job from the, you know, as soon as we felt like we could, putting information about this is what Wake Forest has licensed to, and this is what you can use with corporate data protection, meaning that mm-hmm. our data, if you're signed into your Wake Forest account for Copilot Chat or Gemini Chat, that information is not going to be sent to Google for training. Providing that information and I think continuing to provide that information to remind people what they can use with protection, I think is the quickest way, because people just don't know where to start. And if they're the slightest bit concerned about personal information, that's the thing that kind of gets them over that hump of, if you use Gemini Chat logged in with your Wake Forest account, that information is not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, and being able to point to that and point to the little wording when they log in, prove that's there, is enough for them to say, okay, I might start trying it. I think that's why IS is doing such a good job trying to prepare campus. So we are talking with other vendors and these other companies about how can we incorporate their service with that data protection. So I think another resource that we can provide is not only what's available to them, but to your point, things to look out for. Mm-hmm. You know, Copilot and Gemini, they're going to say you're under, you know, data protection because you're signed in with a corporate account. DeepSeek is saying the exact opposite. So just taking the few seconds before typing in information.
You know, I mean, DeepSeek is a fun punching bag at the moment, but they're not the only ones. No. So you really have to pay attention. And what's interesting is using a tool, the same tool that maybe, like, let's just pick Gemini, using it with your Wake Forest account versus your personal account. You know, in your personal account, it may collect the data, but in your Wake Forest account, it's not the data. Mm-hmm. So those are things people need to look out for. And it's Greg is saying this. He's one of the people who help evaluate the tools, but we also work very closely with our security team. So this is run through the information security team. So it's all these tools are vetted by them as well.
Yeah. And a lot of the embracing of AI, from what I see, is it's from people actually using. Like so, you know, it's some of the people who are helping make the decisions where we're going to go with, mm-hmm. you know, AI and, you know, and maybe encouraging people to use it or take a look at it. Is like, I think that actually comes through on quite a bit of the messaging, is that it's coming from a genuine place of, yeah, we've been using it. And then we check in with whoever we need to check in, make sure, you know, security's not an issue. So I think that's been really, really cool to see and encourage.
You just never know where you are in the industry. And I felt like Wake Forest could have been a little few steps behind of where we should have been, just how fast things came and how fast we didn't quite feel like we caught up. But we're hearing from some of our folks that are part of higher education groups, and you talked about security, and there's a North Carolina group that meets for information security just for higher ed, and he came back saying how far ahead Wake Forest is compared to our peers in higher education. We talked about guidelines and all the resources that mm-hmm. we have that are available to our campus, and all his peers were like, oh, okay. So while, you know, could we be a few steps ahead? Sure. But as fast as AI is growing, I don't know how fast we could actually go. But it kind of does signal the effort Wake Forest is in to say, we want you to use these tools. They can be very beneficial, and they're now part of our world. So from an academic and student perspective, we want to use them, make sure you use them correctly, and you're not letting it write your paper. But mm-hmm. can, you know, if you're stuck, can you put in a prompt to kind of help you brainstorm? And, you know, I've done that a lot with, It's the mundane things. It's the silly things like a Google chat space. What do I name this thing?
Yeah.
So I put in a prompt and say, I'm creating a new chat space about this. Give me some ideas. So it's the, we want you to use it. So we're making sure it's safe and making sure we provide what we can to allow you to use it effectively.
It's a good like first line of defense. I actually have a question for both of you based on some of what you said. Is there any apprehension about AI that either agree with or have in particular?
Yes. The apprehension I have is what most people in the academic world especially fear is that loss of critical. I don't 100% subscribe to that, but I understand where that apprehension is coming from. And I can see it happening in a certain way. I mean, just, you know, we make this comparison between AI and a calculator all the time, that people are not going to be able to do math anymore. I was checking a third grader's homework last night, and I used a calculator to real quickly check it because I didn't want to do it in my head. So it's not that I've lost those skills, but I found easier ways. So I think you can make that comparison where, in the academic sense, students will lose a little bit of that ability to think critically or even creatively because they're going to rely on a tool. Now, what that will do, though, is I think it'll expand their knowledge base in other areas and allow them to touch on different areas. But there is the fear, the apprehension, and I have a little bit of it about that critical.
I wasn't going to use critical thinking as words, but those are the words I was looking for. And while it is my apprehension of, do we become a little lazier? Do we stop taking the time to really think? But one, you have to think of what to ask it.
Mm-hmm.
So while it might cause you not to think as long, if you continue to use it correctly, in my sense, it's a tool that will help you think more critical. Because there's this whole, you know, it was one of the talks at the AI Fest is about prompt engineering. Like, you have to learn how to ask it what you want. Because if you ask it four different ways, you're going to get four different answers. So you have to really hone your skills on asking what you want to get out of it. But then you have to think about the response. You have to make sure you're not just copy and pasting and taking it as fact. So I feel like it's a tool that will help maybe think a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
As long as people use it correctly. And that's kind of a double-edged sword because, you know, there will be people that use it so they don't have to think as much. But I feel like from an academic level, and, you know, I've heard of faculty that are really starting to use it on purpose as class assignments to show what it can do, to show how to use it. And they have to take, like, screenshots and,
of course,
and prove that they're using it in the way. And I think that's how it's the best going to be used is if
as a partner to augment
augmentation
rather than automation.
Right.
That was a whole thing that Anthropic just published. Okay. I don't know. Michael, what are your apprehensions?
A lot of mine actually just come from what I've seen with even just smartphones, where I think I'm a pretty good age range to where I can remember very well, like, things starting to change when we got smartphones. And then so now when I hear all of these, like, narratives of, like, people don't seem as friendly as they used to be, or everyone's on their phones, my apprehension comes more from, like, what I've seen technology do before, opposed to anything specific that I've seen from AI that worries me. Something maybe a little dumb, but I've honestly thought this way since like smartphones and the internet really taking off, kind of, I guess, along the lines of what you guys were saying with, like, critical thinking is, I think Ryan, you and I might have touched on this before, but like how everyone seems to have, like, a bad memory now. And then so, like, I'm just convinced it's because anything you need to know, you could just look.
I don't remember talking about that.
Yeah. No, it was the AI version of you that I talked about. No, but, like, even, again, it sounds kind of dumb, but it's, like, something where, you know, a friend of mine and I, we were really big movie buffs, you know, in high school and all that. And the type of thing where it's like, oh, who is the actor in this movie? And, like, we just be able to name it off the top of their head and stuff. It's like, I there's some stuff, like, I will not, like, I won't look up unless, like, I spend serious time trying to remember, because I genuinely just am like, yeah, man, maybe when you can just look up any amount of info, there's no real incentive to keep that stored up there. So That sounds kind of out there, I guess, but little stuff like that, I would say.
I am guilty as charged with that. I have a bad memory. My 10-year-old has a much better memory. He said, "Daddy, do you remember this?" I said, "No, but I'm not saying you're wrong. I just don't remember." Or, you know, as we talked about the note-taking part of some of these meetings, I'm a copious note-taker because I don't remember things. I have to go check. So where you're apprehensive about us losing our memory, I'm going to love it now when I don't have to remember anything.
Yeah, see, it's interesting too, though, because like the note-taking thing I feel like is a pretty good middle ground in a way, because I like taking notes as well, but then I sometimes find, depending how intensive I have to take notes, then I start tuning out of the conversation because I'm so busy note-taking.
Exactly.
So like hearing you guys talk about it like makes me actually very intrigued to start using these tools so I could be a bit more present. Yes. Because, you know, I'm not like meaning to like zone out. It's just like, okay, I don't want to miss this of, you know, subject A that I need to do, but then I'm behind on this next
step. That is a super common positive comment by a lot of people who really love these note-taking things. They can be more present in the meeting.
Yeah. So I've already started using Notebook LM a bit, and I think it's really... So some of these more like transcription tools, I'm definitely going to check out.
So as we're looking towards the future of AI, what do you guys think is something that Wake Forest could really do in terms of shaping higher ed? And you know, can Wake Forest be a leader? Are we a follower? Is there something innovative we can do? Where can we take, and let's focus on generative AI. We're not a, you know, R1 institution, so we're not going to spend millions of dollars in some server farm. And we have our claim to fame with certain medical breakthroughs, but we're not an R1. So let's talk about mostly inside the class. What do we think we can do with generative AI?
I mean, me personally, I think if we keep doing what we're doing, like keep it, it's, to me, it feels very honest and informative, and it just seems very reasonable.
So when you say do what we're doing now, do you mean kind of these end user type tools and the students and the professors using them? Or
I mean, I'm obviously not there for all meetings, you know, from the top down and stuff, but like from my experience, it seems like a lot of what we're doing with AI is from seeing that it can be useful. Like we said before, taking honest looks at it, things about security, all of that. And it just feels very like organic. Like it's not like, oh, such and such company came and they'll give you this much money to push their AI tool. Like it seems very like genuine. And like I said, the discussions I've been part of, a lot of it, even now us talking, it feel a lot of like everything I've seen feels very just like genuine. Like we're interested in it. We're using it. We're intrigued by it. And then I think those honest discussions, I think, inform people in a really good way, like a real practical way, opposed to getting, you know, too deep into the weeds if that's not something you're into.
I think one thing that Wake Forest is good at from a really an institutional level, but, you know, a lot from the academic level, is taking what's happening around us and to think critically about it. And I don't see, you know, if we continue to go this route and provide the tools to be able to understand it and to feel safe with it, if we can garner an appreciation for what it is and not act like it's not there, you know, have those conversations in classes, have those conversations with faculty so they are more prepared to have those conversations with students and be more of a teacher of how to use them to maybe think more critically. Like it really is a tool that you can use and not something that can save you time. Does it save you time? Yes. I mean, it's part of, you know, like the Gemini for Google Workspace, the whole idea is to save you time. But from a generative AI overall perspective, is if we can appreciate what it is, what kind of tool it can be in your tool bag, I think could be very helpful. One, being able to send students into the workforce, already understanding it and bring in those ideas to wherever they go to work.
Final thoughts from either of you. Are you excited about the future of AI? Do you think it's going to reshape higher education? Do you want to use it with your kids? Do you want to use it with your pets?
I think it's exciting to see where it might go. And I feel like it will reshape some part of higher education. And I'm, you know, excited to see that happen. I will not be using it with my pet. As far as my kids, I will not be using it until they can understand what it is. I'm interested to see in 3-4 years mm-hmm. what it's actually used for and who's still around, like what companies.
Where do you think it's going?
I don't even really think much about it. I feel like I have a pretty good middle ground of using it where I'm comfortable. So I just look forward to getting it refined. So if I, you know, request something, it doesn't come half broken half of the time. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, I don't know. I mean, I couldn't tell you. I'm just along for the ride. I'm not really sweating it too
much. It's going to be a wild ride. You better hang on.
What about you, Ryan?
Well, as we were talking, I was making some notes, so I'm going to save my, really big ideas on higher education for another time. It's going to be an entirely new episode, but I really do think it can reshape higher education with personalized learning.
Yeah.
We don't experience it too much here at Wake Forest, but think about these other universities where you have a 300-student lecture hall taught by a TA.
Yeah.
I've never personally had to sit in one of those classes, but I can't imagine that is the best learning environment, especially when you're paying a lot of money to go to university. Think of the tailored, personalized learning. I can get way more into that. I'm not going to do it right now, but I think it can really reshape every form of education, but especially higher education. I can see where we're expand on the term, really flip the classroom and tailor that learning path. That's where I think can go with higher education.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That'd be really cool.
Knowing how I was in school and some of the areas I was a bit, you know, I was more shy student, and even in college some of the stuff that I struggled with, I could see that being exceptionally useful for a case-by-case basis for sure.
Thank you for listening to the Deeks.ai podcast, where Wake Forest innovators unpack the real-world magic of artificial intelligence through candid conversations. We hope you'll continue to join us as we explore how AI is transforming work across campus one fascinating story at a time.